for the idea of Tfilas Ma'ariv. Rashi on our Parsha is actually echoing the Gemara in Masechta Brachos, which actually has a debate. And this is a debate that we spoke about when we spoke about Mincha, that the Gemara has a famous debate, two opinions, what is the basis of the daily davening. One opinion is that it's based on the Karbanos, the Karban Tamid morning and afternoon. According to that opinion, what was Ma'ariv? Anyone remember? We mentioned it then, excellent, but obviously it's relevant for today's shiur, that the leftover meat or fats that hadn't fully been consumed and burned that day could remain burning throughout the night. That's one opinion. However, the Gemara has an alternate opinion, which is of course what Rashi is quoting on our Parsha, which is that it's not based on the Karbanos, but rather Tfilos Keneged Avos Tiknum, that rather Avram was Metaken Tfilas Shachris, Yitzchak was Metaken Tfilas Mincha, and in our Parsha, Vayivka ein pegiya ala lashon tefila, says the Gemara, it's a form of tefila, that verb, and therefore it's an allusion to the fact that Yaakov davened a prayer. We know it was the night time, he went to sleep. So that was the basis of tefilas mincha. So that is, Ma'ariv, thank you. So that is the basis of our shir. So what I'd like to discuss is some of the really interesting aspects that make Ma'ariv unique. We'll see the practical ramifications, but before we get to that, really, and initially in the first stage of the sugya, just the basic understanding of Tfilas Ma'ariv, which is really different than, I think you'll see, as we realize, for the other tefilos. We know that there's an obligation to daven Shachros every day, there's an obligation to daven Mincha every day, and even though we haven't discussed it, you may be familiar with the fact that there is a famous machlokes about whether that is a mitzvah d'araisa or d'rabanan, the Rambam versus the Ramban, how do we understand daily tefilos? But whether tefilos on a daily level are d'araisa or d'rabanan, everyone agrees that the multiple tefilos per day and the actual nusach that we say, the timing, morning versus evening, this hour versus that hour, that is rabbinic. But it is an obligation. That everyone agrees it is. What about Ma'ariv? Is Ma'ariv any different or not? And this is actually the basis of a fascinating machlokes in Masechta Brachos on Daf Chav Zayin, where the Gemara there contemplates two possibilities. Yobro? What are the two possibilities that the Gemara contemplates about Ma'ariv? Rishut or Chiyuv, exactly. The Gemara has an amazing debate. One opinion says, in fact, that there's no obligation to daven Ma'ariv. It's just optional. It's a rishus. There's a concept, the Gemara is aware of it. According to both opinions, we know about it. But some say, no, it's no obligation. Other opinion says, no, it's an obligation. It's obligatory, no different than Shachris or Mincha. It's a really, just on the face of it, it's a striking Gemara. There's no Gemara that says, well, you know, we have a whole Masechta with the details of Lulav, but by the way, we're going to, if you dig deep a little bit, you'll see a Gemara, you know, Machlokes is Lulav, a Rishus, or a Chova, right? You don't usually have such a Machlokes. If the Gemara takes for granted that we have such a mitzvah, it kind of takes for granted that it's a mitzvah, that it's obligatory. Yet, Ma'ariv is this unique kind of bird, and there is such a machlokes. Not only that, adding to our intrigue, it seems clear from the conclusion of the Gemara. You guys are with us?
Yeah, we're trying.
Good. So it seems clear from the conclusion of the Gemara, and this is how the poskim generally paskin. It seems clear that, in fact, the final ruling is Tfilas Arvis Rishus. That the main opinion is the optional one. Right now, I see the light bulbs going off in your head. You know, the evening just got a little freer. A lot to do. So we have to understand, and obviously this is what I'd like to discuss tonight, what exactly does that mean? Why should it be? What does it mean? And what are the ramifications? I haven't said much yet, but what's the question?
I remember there being a Gemara that said that anyone who says that Ma'ariv is Rishus is Misa. Like,
interesting.
If
you could find that for me, that would be interesting.
No, I think you say like Ma'ariv after midnight. I think.
No, because we say specifically.
Anyway, let's. You're not Chayiv Misa. That's the halacha. It's Rishus. Yes.
When you say Ma'ariv, you include.
No, thank you for clarifying. We are not talking about Kriya Shema. We, for convenience sake, to some extent, coalesce or coincide Ma'ariv with Kriya Shema. But Kriya Shema is a mitzvah d'araisa, two times a day, including in the evening, v'shach b'chov kumecha, and that is going to be completely independent of what we do about Marv. Good question.
So the army test.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. So, the first question is, the two Gemaras that we quoted, the Gemara about whether it's the Avos or the Karbanos, that's on Daf Chavav. The Gemara about whether it's a Rishus or a Chova, that's on Daf Chav Zayin. They're one page apart. The question is there any connection between the two Gemaras? Right? It seems to be inviting and almost... calling us that there should be a connection, but the Gemara itself makes no connection between the two questions. What's the basis of the Tfilos? Meaning, what's the basis of Marv? Is it the burning of the fats overnight or Yaakov? Question number one. Question number two is Marv obligatory or optional? The Gemara does not connect those two machlokos. But logically, if you think about it, there does seem to be a connection, and this is not my chiddush by any stretch. Rashi. The Masechta Shabbos makes the connection. Some of the commentaries on the Ein Yaakov, the Mar Pnim, who's a commentator on the Yerushalmi, following Rashi, they all say that in fact there is a connection. In fact, they are completely coalescing the two Gemaras. Ha, baha, talya. The Gemaras are completely interdependent. If you say that Tfila is connected the Avos, Avrami, it's like in Yaakov. Well, what is Yaakov? Cinderella. Yaakov is not as good as Avraham Yitzchak. If the other two tefillos are chovos, because Avraham and Yitzchak were establishing them, so Marav is also a chov. Yaakov is no less than Avraham Yitzchak. The Medrash actually calls them the Bechir Sheva Avos. So he's certainly not any less. So Rashi says, if you hold that it's connected Avos, then you'll conclude that Marav is obligatory. But if you hold that it's no, all of the tefillos are corresponding to what? To the karbanos. In that case, so the carbon tamid in the morning, obligatory. Carbon tamid in the afternoon, obligatory. But let's say you had burned up all the meat and all the fats. Not obligatory to burn the rest of the night. It's just an option that if you haven't finished burning everything, you can allow it to burn. It's very neat. It fits very, very beautifully. The problem with this is most Rishonim split the vote. Most Rishonim seem to think that ultimately the Karbanos are the regulating source, and most Rishonim hold that nevertheless, Karbanos and that Marv is a Rishus. Again, most Rishonim do include the possibility of the Avos in some form or another, and yet most Rishonim hold that it is a Rishus. So how could you get away with doing that without insulting Yaakov? That's our first question. No, if you hold it as Yaakov, if you include the Avos somehow in the formulation of the mitzvah, which most Rishonim do, either exclusively or as a kind of a hybrid, so then are you locked into saying that Marav is a Chova? That's what Rashi says. Most Rishonim, though, seem to hold Rishus, even though they draw inspiration from or source the whole Marav as Yaakov. That's the crisscross. I wasn't clear initially, I'm sorry. So there are two or three explanations to kind of thread the needle. Just interesting, before we get into some of the practical halacha, I think this is pretty interesting. The Pnei Yehoshua, a classical early achronim on the Gemara, the Pnei Yehoshua in Masechta Brachos and Daf Chavav, he says very simply, when you read the psukim, Vayifka b'makom, does it sound like Yaakov had in mind to establish something? Not at all. It was more of a happenstance, right? He happened on the place. And in fact, taking its cue from that hint in the text, the Gemara Masechta Chulin, Daf Tzadi Aleph, says that basically Yaakov happened to be there. Once he realized where he was, he said to himself, how can I not daven in a place that my forefathers davened? So the Pnei Yehoshua points out with all of that, that it's only once he realized, now when did he realize that this was the holy place? When he had the miracle, he woke up, he realized Hashem made the miracle for him, he had this transcendent, you know, miraculous prophetic vision. So therefore he prayed. But it was more of a spontaneous tefillah. And therefore says the Pnei Yehoshua, yes, it's true that Yaakov davened there. And yes, it may be true that subsequently he had in mind to establish this for his descendants as a daily regular thing. But the initial time Yaakov davened that even tefillah, he davened it as a rishus. He didn't daven it because it was obligatory. He davened it as a rishus. So we draw inspiration from Yaakov. Just like his original tefillah was as a rishus, so do we have a rishus? That's the Pnei Yehoshua's answer. Again, we're modeling it after Yaakov. He's no less, he's no chicken soup, he's no less than anybody else. Yavam Yitzchak, he's right up there. But they daven their tefillah as in a feeling that they were obligated or initiating an obligatory tefillah. He initially davened it more as a spontaneous, optional tefillah. Yes? Right?
That also seems like...
Why? Why not?
Oh,
maybe, but...
It could be at any time.
Yeah, could be. Again, the Pnei Yeshua, again, has... Before you get into Pnei Yeshua, you have the Gemara, which elaborates on the Pasuk in our Parsha that clearly makes it seem that it was a spontaneous reaction to his realization of where he was. So the Pnei Yeshua just puts it all together. I'm not saying it's Mukhruch by any stretch, but that is what he says. And the Netziv says something similar as well. So that's the first approach. It is based on Yaakov, but it's still a Rishus, because when Yaakov davened, he only did it in that optional kind of way. Yes?
According to that approach, how can Mara be a Choba? Because according
it's
to
not. Christ, no, that's the point. That's what we're trying to answer.
Okay, so then people have not all like this to be able to say that's a Choba.
Yeah, the simple understanding, Rashi, the first answer we said is no. Yaakov davened Marv just like Yitzchak davened Mincha, just like Avram davened Shachris, they made a chova, he made a chova. Says the Pnei Yeshua, no, you can still retain Yaakov, but conclude Rishus. Okay? Second answer along those lines, but in a different way, is the Torah Tamima. The Torah Tamima is written by Rav Baruch Halevi Epstein. He is the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, who was the Rav of Nevardok. He did not have the family business, he was a banker. He was not a rabbi, he was a banker. But he was a humongous, humongous Talmud Chacham, and he wrote a number of Svarim, including, perhaps most famously, a commentary on the Torah called the Torah Temima, where he does two things. He has a Perush, which I'm about to quote from, but he also quotes all the Torah Shebaal Peh. He'll quote, you'll see a Pasuk or a Rashi, and then he'll have a footnote, and he'll tell you where in Shas this is discussed. Quite a remarkable bekius. Not wide-ranging knowledge. And then, at the bottom of the page, he has his own commentary. So the Torah Tzmimah here in Bereishis, in our Parsha, says that Yaakov may have davened it in the same vein that his forefather and grandfather did, but technically speaking, it doesn't matter. Because technically speaking, what he was doing was an optional tefillah. How so? Because the Gemara says in Masechta Erevin that if you're on the road, and again, in those days, not like now, in those days, journeys were quite difficult. People were always nervous about the sakana and the like. The Gemara there says, technically, while you're going from Minsk to Pinsk in your wagon, you're putter from davening. You're putter from davening. You can't have yeshiva das then. It's dangerous. So Yaakov davened. But the whole tefillah, by definition, because he was on the run, was a tefillah shel rishus. So it reaches the same conclusion as the Pnei Yeshua, but from a different perspective. Namely, that even whether Yaakov had it in mind or not to do an optional tefillah, it doesn't matter. But we can't be better than Yaakov. And since his tefillah was optional, so our Marv forever will be optional. Yes, Austin.
Why don't we call like every single time Yaakov or Avraham says,
That's a good question. It's a good question. But first of all, talking to Hashem or calling out to Hashem is not necessarily... Well, let's just say, if they're calling out to Hashem as in help me, that is by definition a form of prayer.
But like, Yaakov, didn't he call out the name of Hashem here? Like...
No, we know that he davened here. Chazal tells he davened here. But the question is, was it a form of, so to speak, setting down a new kind of historical paradigm for his people, for his descendants, that they would have to follow?
And also, if he woke up from a dream, wouldn't it be day?
What? No.
No, I don't know the psukim, but like...
Okay, you take a look at the part. Okay, yes.
I just think about the idea... The mere fact that we daven Marv every night...
I'm going to get to that.
Like, how could you...
I'm going to get to that.
How could you say it was a rishus?
T.O.
Okay.
Yeah.
Couldn't you argue that because we... We want to emulate the Avor, and we're never going to have a situation that even if he's a holy man, he can do it spontaneously, but we're never going to reach that level, so you might as well, even though it's different, to try to emulate some sort of form of that, we do it as an opposite.
That's probably what Rashi would say. Yeah. You're right. The only thing we're trying to accomplish is to say, can we maintain Avos, Yaakov, and Rishus? So Rashi says no. Rashi says, if you go like Yaakov, It was a chova. But don't you look at the psukim? Doesn't it sound like it was spontaneous? So Rashi would probably say what you said. But again, if you want to maintain both, so you're not locked in, Rashi locks you in. So those are the two approaches. A third approach, I just saw yesterday, a friend of mine who's a Rebbe, a young Rosh Hashiva at YU, Rabbi Daniel Feldman, a massive, massive Talmud Chacham, and a great guy to boot. He's actually about to publish this week, I think his either sixth or seventh Sefer. That would be a lot if he was 82, not if he was 42. Anyway, but quite, or maybe 43. 43, come on, then it's easy. It's nothing, right? Six Svarim by the time you're 43? What's the big deal? Anyway, I think it might be his seventh Sefer, and he's edited about five or six in addition. Anywho, so in one of the books that he edited, not authored, although he does have a book coming out this week on Lashon Hara in the modern world, very fascinating, internet, media, all sorts of interesting things that he's going to be discussing, Shaduchim, doctors, anyway.
What's it called?
I don't know. Do I look like his agent?
What's his name?
Rabbi Daniel Feldman. Anyway. Amazing man. So he has an article in a book that I believe he actually was the editor of. They published a book from the faculty of YU called Mitocha Ohel on the Siddur, on davening. So I think it's volume 3. He has an article on Maariv. So there, I took a look. So he quotes a Zohar, which I have to admit I never knew about, that the Zohar gives a third answer. Again, the question being, can you maintain that Maariv is from Yaakov and yet still say it's a Rishus? So either you hold because it was spontaneous, or because he was on the run. And Zohar says, very simply, we asked, is Yaakov like Cinderella? Is he like not as good as the other two? And Zohar says just the opposite. Because Yaakov was on such a high level, this is taking what you said before a little bit further, the Zohar says apparently it's because Yaakov was on such a high level, nothing could ever be learned from him. And therefore, even though he did it as a chiyuv, we can never mimic him, and therefore it kind of distilled down to us as a rishus. I don't know if you call that logical, illogical. The Zohar works on its own forms of logic. But that's what the Zohar says apparently in Parshas Truma. So one way or the other, I want to move on to get into the meat of the shir. This is kind of just the hors d'oeuvres. But basically, again, we have a machlokas. Is it rishut or chova? We seem to paskin rishut. It's optional. And then there's this other interesting machlokas of avos versus karbanos, and we just discussed now for 10 minutes how those two issues be related. Yes, Jacob.
Isn't that a very dangerous way of looking at
it? It's not a typical way. It's not typical. One day, Mirtz Hashem, Jacob, you will be on such a level, you'll be learning Zohar. I hope I'll be alive, and you will call me, and you will let me know what the pshat in that Zohar is. Everyone, and for the record, it really would be nice if you called everyone else in the room. Just, you know, Don't forget about the little guys, okay? Anyway, all right. Let's move on and let's get into our the meat of the shir, which was raised before in an excellent question, and that is, what's the story? Like, do we daven Maariv? Don't we daven Maariv? You know, can I just like skip it and tell, you know, Rabbi Ryan, sorry, it's a rishus? You know, all those times my Rebbe or my father said, come to Maariv. Like, what's the story? What's going on? We say it. We don't say it. We have to. We don't have to. What's going on? So, in a nicer way, I'll ask the question as follows. Is it really a rishus? Like, don't we sense that we have to daven? What's really going on? So, there seems to be a very interesting machlokes. And the machlokes comes up in the Rishonim when they're bothered by two Gemaras. Again, as I say, most Rishonim. Step one is that most Rishonim assume that Maariv is a rishus. Okay, that's the assumption of the, that's the way they read the conclusion of the Gemara. That does seem to be the conclusion. However, they point out two Gemaras that seem to be a problem. Number one, the Gemara also on Brachos says what in same Daf Tav Chavav? What did you forget, Maariv? You got it. What's the halacha? What are you supposed to do?
Tashlumin.
So the Gemara says, excellent. The next morning you'll say two Shacharses. Okay, there are details, there are parameters of the halachas of Tashlumin. If you're completely negligent, you're not really allowed to do Tashlumin. But let's say you had a good excuse. So you daven twice. Come along the Rishonim, Tosfos, and others and say, what is daven Tashlumin for? Nuria, what's the question? If we hold, we just got through saying that Maariv is a Rishus. So if I did it, that would be great. But if I didn't do it, what should be the result?
Nothing.
So I didn't do it. Why am I obligated to do Tashlumin? Tashlumin is a bonus, it's a mulligan. The Torah, halacha, lets us get another one. The Gemara is going to say, you're obligated to do Tashlumin. Isn't it a rishus?
Saying if I didn't do it, I
which you obviously don't. Question number two, also based on another Gemara, on Daf Lamed in Brachos, famous Gemara, you all know this halacha, it was just Rosh Chodesh, first night of Rosh Chodesh. You forgot Yalav Yom. Gemara, you forgot. You have to go back and repeat the Shemana Esrei or not,
no.
Says the Gemara famously, you do not have to repeat if you forget Yalav and Maariv, because what's the reason? And excellent, Mordechai. They weren't Mekadosh the Rosh Chodesh at night. What's the obvious question? Why do we need to come on to that razzle dazzle answer based on the way they were Mekadosh the new moon back in the time of Sanhedrin, hand in a hair, turning myself into a pretzel? I have a simpler, more direct answer. You don't have to go back because the whole thing was a Rishus. So maybe I wasn't Yosei without Yalav Yavo, but no. What's so bad? I didn't have to do it to begin with. Those are the questions that the Rishonim asked in those two Gemaras. Our Gemara seemed to conclude as the Rishonim Paskin, it's a Rishus, yet these two Gemaras seem to retain an assumption of obligation. How do we put it all together? So, there are a number of answers to this question. The first, which is a minority opinion, but I'm just going to throw it out there because we're a comprehensive kind of a shir. The first is the Ra'ah. The Ra'ah in the Masechta Brachos. The Ra'ah says, Ein Achinami, you're right. Doesn't make any sense. The word doesn't make any sense. No, what it means is, those two Gemaras are only going according to the opinion of Chova. So they're Shalom Aliba de Hilchos. A tremendous Chiddush. According to the Ra'ah, you do have to go back, or there would be other explanations, but those Gemaras are giving explanations only according to the opinion that we don't possibly like. But Ein Achinami, you're right. If it's Rishus, there's no Tashlumin. If it's Rishus, that's the reason you have to go back and miss Yalav Yavo. That's the Ra'ah. But that's a minority view. I'm just throwing it out there because you might be somewhere and you'll throw out the Ra'ah and you'll impress people. It's just good to know there is a Ra'ah out there, okay? But that's not the real proper Ra'ah, Reish Aleph. Chichik, hey. Okay, the Ra'ah. However, there are two more common approaches. It's fundamentally really a two-man game. Tosfos, and those who follow Tosfos actually speaks about this both on Chavav and Chavzayin, Rabbeinu Yonah, they all say the whole thing is smoke and mirrors. It's all misdirection. The machlokes about Marv, is it a Rishus? Or is it a Chova? They're not really that far apart. It didn't really mean Rishus. They're not really Rishus. Rather, sometimes the Gemara has a red herring. The Gemara really means it's not as obligatory as other mitzvos. We have in some contexts the Gemara will use a term, or Rishonim will use a term, mitzvah legabi chova kari Rishus. But even within two mitzvos, you could have one that's really obligatory, a chova, and one which is just a mitzvah. So we'll call it a Rishus. Not because it's really optional in the same way that Yerushalmi or potato, which kugel do you want? That's an option, it's a Rishus. You know my answer. I'll take them both. But why do you have to choose? But that's optional. But does it really mean a Rishus? Give me one second. Does it really mean a Rishus? It means it's not as obligatory as some other mitzvos. So I'll just read you a quote from Tosfos, who say, loved after Rishus. It just means that if you would have a situation, in which there was a conflict, right? There are times in life, Mordechai, where there's a conflict. I have two things pulling at me. How do I know which mitzvah to do? How do I break the tie? So it says, that's all the Gemara meant. If you're ever in a position of conflict, so then Marv will lose out. Compared to another bona fide obligation, Marv, if you had some pressing mitzvah, or Mariv, you could leave out Mariv because relative to other obligations, the Rishus. But, says Tosfos, Ein avalachinam, Ein levat tala, Ein levat la. But just for no good reason, you can't skip it. Now, ask me a question, you know, my favorite team is on, the 4 o'clock game, is that levat tala or not? You like it? Ask your local Orthodox rabbi.
No, there's no pshita, of course.
Well, don't ask Boston. I said local Orthodox rabbi, okay? All right? That's for you to decide. Do you have a question?
Yes. So the thing is, that doesn't help me answer the question of the yellow, because then what you just say is not as much of a,
No, it does. Again, what was the question? It's confusing, so let me make try to make it clear. The Gemara said you don't have to go back to Yalav Yavo because of the whole Bezin thing. So our question was, why don't you say you don't have to go back because it's a Rishus? So the answer to Tosfos is, you're right, because it's not really a Rishus. So I don't have to go back because of Bezin. The question is, why do we need to come on to that? Why don't we say more simply because it's a Rishus? Tosfos answers beautifully, because guess what? It's not really a Rishus. It's really a Chova, just a Sug Bet Chova.
I mean, they could also say the answer of, it's not that much of a shush, therefore, like, in terms of doing an Avera of saying, for example, a Tala versus no Tala.
You could, but they say more than that. Tosa goes further than that. That would have been a more minimalist way of saying it. Tosa says, no, it's only relevant for that one in a million case, or once every Sunday in the winter, as the case may be for Austin. One in a million case in which there's a conflict between a mitzvah and Marid, Marv will lose out. But in general, Lo Lechina Levatla, yes.
Why can't you say by at least the first answer, if you forget Mara, by the Toshomi thing, and then maybe by the second answer, that once you take it upon yourself to daven Mara,
Perfect segue! You've almost made up for your previous comment. And then, I said almost, but anyway, there is a second approach. There's a second approach. Not Tosfos or Ben Yona. Another approach quoted by in the name of the Bahag, picked up on by the Rosh, the Rambam, and lots of really good people. And Austin, which is to say completely differently. Ein hachi nami. Words mean something, and the Gemara means what it says, and says what it means, and if the Gemara said a reshus, it really meant it. Not like Tosos, who takes all the wind out of our sails, and that was not really ever a reshus. Says the Bible, reshus means a reshus means a reshus. I know what that means. But there's a concept of kiblu alayu. We can take something that was originally optional and accept it upon ourselves as a chiyuv. Now, there's different formulations of how to say this. If you look carefully in the Rishonim, it seems like the Rosh and others talk about it almost on a case-by-case basis. Now, once a person davens marid, he is subconsciously, or consciously preferably, accepting it as a chiyuv. He didn't have to do it. He would never have been an aver if he didn't do it. But once he did it, that's one way of putting it. I think the more common, and I personally am more convinced by the alternate way, which is if you take a look, for example, in the Rambam and Hilchos Tefillah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Vav, and others say, not on a one-on-one basis, you, me, and someone else. Rather, the Jewish people, the community. In Chanami, there was some moment in time where Marv was totally optional. But there was another moment in time, and don't ask me to date that, I have no idea when that was. I don't even know if the Rambam would know. But there was a moment in time in which the community said, you know what? Marv is important to us. We want to have it, whatever the reasons are. And we accept it upon ourselves, kind of like a minog. It becomes like a neder. And now it becomes obligatory. So you and I have no choice whether the football game is on or not. We have to go and daven Marv. Maybe there was a time in history where it was purely reshus, but nowadays it is a chova. Yes?
Wouldn't that mean women should be obligated?
Oh, so let's skip ahead for a minute. I was going to do it at the end, but I don't know if I would get to it, so I might as well mention it since you asked the question. What about women? So in light of this, the Prima Godin, who's quoted by the Mishnah Brura, says that even if you assume, which they do, that women are obligated to daven, that means two times. Shacharis and Minchah, again, most women don't know this. A lot of women don't keep this. Already in the time of the Magen Avram, he says that women don't daven. So he has certain terutzim to try to defend it. But it's really not what should be done. Women should daven Shacharis and Minchah. It's the right thing to do. According to Mishnah Berurah and others, that is the halacha. But, they say, that's only Shacharis and Minchah, because those were the obligatory tefillos. But Ma'ariv, they say it's true there was a moment in time where the Jewish people accepted it. Women never did. Doesn't mean a woman can't daven Marv. Chas v'shalom. Of course she can daven Marv every night of the week if she wants.
But and then she's chayav on the same.
That would be a separate issue. That would be a separate. That would be case by case. Just like we have a general concept of a person who does an optional mitzvah, maybe there could become a minhag where they have to do it. You know, you stand for chazara shatz, all of a sudden now you want to change. No, maybe you're obligated, you've been standing. Right, that's a separate issue. But women as a category, says Mishnah Berurah, are paturos from Maariv, because that's an echo, that's a reflection of the fact that it was never really obligatory, it was only a minhag, it got adopted, but not by women. But not everyone agrees to that. The Aruch HaShulchan, he says, no. And it sounds like he's more going with the original Tosos approach. It didn't really mean it was some minhag which got adopted. A reshus that got adopted. It's really always a chova to daven Maariv. And therefore, he says, there's no such thing as a class, a category of women paturos. No, women are obligated. Right? You want equality, I'll give you equality. Equality of obligation. That's not always as popular as equality of opportunity. Equality of obligation. Right? You're obligated. You got to daven Maariv 3 times a day. You want other opportunities? Let's talk about that after you start davening Maariv. You're davening 3 times a day. That's Aruch HaShulchan. It's a minority view. I think generally we assume that women are not obligated in Maariv. And certainly in most communities, women are not makbid to daven Maariv.
That's a spar, though. Why are women obligated in Maariv?
Why who?
Women. The Aruch HaShulchan spar.
No, because he's holding, again, like Tosfos. Tosfos says it was never really a reshus. It's really, really, really like Shacharis and Mincha. It's just that the Gemara called it a reshus because in a 1 in a million case.
But it doesn't apply in the face of what the Brimmer Gadim said. Or
yes, it's against him. And it's an argument.
Everyone who says that.
Okay. I said it's a minority view.
Good.
Yes.
Is there a real like nafkamina between the sport?
Yes.
And the Rambam and others.
Yes. Yeah. Let's get to it.
Because I was going to say like it's almost the same idea because non-obligatory and then taking it on as a it sounds like similar sort of levels.
Yes.
We got like Mashi Barua or something.
So again, the nuances of how to formulate it was a reshus and it became adopted, I don't know if there's a big nafkamina between that. But the idea that, what do we mean by reshus? Is it really reshus? Or nowadays we... I'll reframe your question, if you don't mind.
Of course.
You can. You have deniability if you want.
Okay, please.
I mean, you have to hear what I say first. I'm saying, I'm giving you permission to walk away. The question is there any lasting impact, or was this all just nice back to the future, you know, just looking back at what was? But lemaisa, now you open up a Shulchan Aruch, you have to daven Maariv, you betcha. So the fact that it was once a reshus, whatever that means, does that have any ramification nowadays? That's the question. Are you okay with me? Does it really matter how it was then? Lemaisa, now you have to do it. So one answer might be the women. The more you see it as having always been a chova, so maybe women are obligated. The more you see it having really been a reshus and then changing, maybe that skipped the women for some historical sociological reason. But I have better nafkaminas than that. I don't mean better because they're better than women. But I think they're better in terms of halachically. They're more connected. So let me show you a few. Okay, we have 15, 20 minutes or so, a little less than 20 minutes. So let me show you a few. Who's counting? The Rambam in a number of places seems to be clear that even though now you and I are obligated to daven Maariv, but that is only a personal obligation. To put it in Lomdasha terms, that's a chovas gavra. You, me, individually, behaviorally, we're obligated to do it. But what's the it? Do what? The Rambam seems to say in a number of places that yes, you're obligated to do it, but the it is still a tefillah shel reshus. What changed? The status of the davening or the nature of our obligation? So I'll give you an example. The Rambam says, how come it is that Maariv of all the tefillos has the most elastic timing? We daven Maariv early, right? Early Maariv. I'm not even discussing Friday night now. Stop, regular. So many communities, right after Shkia, they daven Maariv. And they try to remember, repeat Kriya Shema, the whole thing. Do you daven mincha early? 11 o'clock, mincha early. It's absurd.
You can burn the Avarim earlier, so it doesn't... You know.
You're always burning. What's even halakhically? So the Rambam says, step beyond what you were saying, Mordechai. Says the Rambam, you know why we're not medaktik in the Zman, that's his term, of Maariv? Because Maariv is a reshus. What do you mean it's a reshus? But the Rambam himself says we accepted it now as a chova. The Rambam is not saying that once upon a time you didn't have to be careful about the Zman, but now you have to be. The Rambam is saying, no, now you don't have to be makbid, you can daven Maariv early, Because it is a rishus. What does that mean? Moreover, how come there's no chazaras hashatz at Maariv? I know people are saying, like, no, don't that's been closed, right? Yeah. Don't reopen that one, Rabbi. But think about it, right? No one wants to look a gift horse in the mouth. But why? Right? How come there's no chazaras hashatz?
Because then we want to make it to dinner.
One possibility.
I thought it was then the thieves from attackers because they were dominating the field.
Dinner.
So the Rambam, as well as the Rashba in a Tshuva, he says the same thing. The Rambam says, you know why there's no chazaras hashatz? Because it's a rishus. What we wanted to say about Yalav Yavo, the Rambam says about chazaras hashatz, namely, what's the purpose of chazaras hashatz to some extent, which we spoke about recently, to help the people who don't know how to daven on their own. Okay, so if you don't know how to daven Maariv, it's not the end of the world. It's not obligatory. But what do you mean it's not obligatory? The Rambam himself says that nowadays is obligatory. So how do we understand, give me a minute, I have to develop this, how do we understand these two Rambams with a third? And this is not the Chiddush of my manuscript, this is actually a Chiddush of Reb Chaim Brisker. And there's a Chiddush that's in the Sefer. There's a third Rambam. Imagine there's one Shlemiel who forgets to daven. Okay. More common one, I would say. Much less common is the guy who is davening and goes, oh no, I already davened. Has that ever happened to you? That's when you know you're shun of that material, okay? You're davening more than you, right? Shun off, it's like, oh, I can't get out of bed. Shun of bed, it's like, whoa, I davened already, again and again. Gotta daven more, all right? So says the Rama, what if you're in the middle of davening and you realize, Baruch Hashem Bonet, whoa, I did that already, 45 minutes ago. Says the Rama, stop! Do not pass go, do not collect $200, stop, even if you're in the middle of a bracha. Because every word you say is unnecessary, every bracha you say would be a bracha levatala. What's been done is done, but stop! That's the psalm. No, that's in general. Shachar's a mincha. Says the Rambam. But if you're davening Maariv and you realize, oh my gosh, I already davened Maariv, which by the way could happen. If you usually go to the late minyan and then something happened and some guy's at work at 6 o'clock and said, quick, let's daven now. And then later you're in the base medrash because that's what you guys are going to do after you come home from work. I know that once you guys are grown up and have your own family, you're going to go to base medrash every night. There's going to be a talk Maariv there. You're going to forget that you daven at the office at 6 o'clock. And you daven in a second Maariv. Says the Rambam, if you remember in the middle, you have a better option. Mentally, shift gears. And tell yourself, I'm not davening Maariv because I don't really have to daven Maariv. I'm going to finish it up as a voluntary prayer as a nedava. You do not have that option for Shacharis and Mincha because once you start something, it's obligatory. It's on the A train. You can't change to the B train. And if you jump while the trains are moving, you might really get hurt. But says Rambam, for Maariv, Mitndrinin, right in the middle, you can shift. Says the Ravid, I don't think so. Actually, what the Ravid said was, how do he put it? I'm pretty sure that there's a girsa, maybe in the Cairo Geniza it says that. I didn't write down the quote. I thought I had the quote. I think it says Ein Ruach Nocha Himenu or something like that. It basically says Ein Parv. It doesn't make any sense. Like three words, he dismisses it. He thinks it should be the same. You can't switch for Shachar Mitzvah. You can't switch for Maariv. Comes along Reb Chaim Brisker. Says, what's going on here? The following explanation. When we say that Maariv is a Rishus, and then somehow at some point in history it changed, what does that mean? The Ravid understands that what happened is we transmuted the whole Tefillah. There was once an opinion of Chova, which we didn't hold like. At one point in history we said, you know what? Stop, freeze the frame, we're going back to that opinion. We're now going to treat Maariv, the rest of our history, like that opinion who originally said Chova. So now it is a Chova. Kit and caboodle, the whole thing, it's a Chova. That was an opinion which we didn't originally accept. At one point in history, Klal Yisrael decided to pass it like the other opinion. If that's the case, there's no logical basis, says the Ravid, to switch and have a different sock for Maariv than you have for the other ones. However, what about the Rambam? The Rambam says what I told you before. Even though the Rambam himself says now it's a chova, says Reb Chaim with his characteristic brisker precision, what does that mean? So he says what it means is not that the tefillah changed, but that we changed. We individually, it was once a time where I wake up or for that matter, finished dinner or whatever I was doing, and I could decide today Marav no, yes, today Marav yes. I had a choice. So now, freedom of choice has been taken away from you. I mean it obviously in a manner of speaking. No different than freedom of choice to keep kosher or not. Meaning, I don't mean physically can you do it or not. I mean, religiously, you don't have a choice anymore. You are obligated to daven Marav. You're chovas gavra. You are obligated. But once you do it, or when you do it, what is the it? It remains a tefillah for shus. You pass it like an opinion. That never changed. And therefore, when you're doing it, which you have to do, it still has a somewhat different status. Because you're davening a tefillah, shel reshus. It's always, you're obligated. It's again, it's almost like a, it's like a, it's like a riddle. You are obligated to daven an optional tefillah. The nature of the tefillah is optional. Your obligation, personal obligation, is obligatory. And therefore, it's not such a big deal to switch trains because you're not really switching trains. When you switch in the middle to the Nadava, it is really always a tefillah shomer shus. That also explains the Rambam why there will be differences. No chazar sashatz. We don't have to be bedaktik so much in this man. Yes, briefly, because I want to say a few more practical halachic points. Quickly, yes.
How do the rabbi explain the no chazar sashatz?
So there are different explanations. There are different explanations for that. Some say the Mishnah Berurah, for example, quotes, why don't we have chazar sashatz? Well, maybe it's because it was at night, people, it's dangerous and other things, it's a tircha d'tzibura. So that's a very weak kind of an answer, I would say. Yeah. I would say. It's something different. So why does the Mishnah Berurah say that? That makes more sense. The more you see Marav as being similar, you need to come kind of twist yourself into a pretzel to find another explanation. Right? The Rambam's answer is easier, but not if you don't accept it, the premise of it. Yes?
Are there any practical applications concerning saying it with a minion?
I mean, I don't know of anyone who says you don't have to say it with a minion, if that's what you're asking.
If you can't, is it less bad?
Well, I'll tell you where it is. The answer to that is yes. The answer to that is yes, I would say. Where it comes up is as follows. What's the timing of Marav? So even though, according to the Mishnah and the Ikar Hadin, you should be able to daven Marav until dawn, until Alos, and the Gemara says, and then we pass it to Shulchan Aruch, but the Chamin made a Geder, a word you would forget if you'd come out. Gemara has a story there, but the boy's coming home. Anyway, the Gemara says, we pass it, you should say Marav by Chatzos. Even though we, the line before, so to speak, we said you could daven until dawn. So there's a discussion I saw that Rabban Sion Abba Shaul, one of the great recent Sfardi, Roshivas and Poskim, of the most recent generation. So he and others discuss, what if you have two options? You can either daven later, like at 3 in the morning, or who knows what, with a minion, or before chatzos without a minion. They pass it before chatzos without a minion. It's not exactly what you asked, but it's an echo of what you were asking. Okay? Okay, one last question, then I'll move on.
Can we just say, Marav, it exists so that we could say that Tashlumin by Mincha? Like, so it's a reshut in the fact.
But what about all the other days where I've davened Mincha?
No, but it might not, definitely once you take it upon yourself because like you need it for the Tashlumin, like, I guess you should daven every single day.
I think
you
really be making, you know, that would be making Marv into something that like she wishes she could be Cinderella. I'm saying that it only exists so that we have a Tashlumin for Mincha.
No,
is that what you're saying?
Like
I don't think
you
so.
Would say that you would say the Tashlumin by Mincha, but I thought you need like another daven.
So if there was no Marv, then we'd say Tashlumin of Mincha is Shacharis. Tashlumin is the next tefillah.
That's so far.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but I just don't think that you're thinking about it the right way. We wouldn't make an obligation of Marav in order to have a Tashlumin for Mincha. That's too backdoor. Mm-hmm. What would we do about Mincha if there was no Marav? I don't know. But luckily we live in this universe, not an alternative one, and there is one. Mm-hmm. The question is, how do we understand this? Yes, quickly. How does davening two Marav help for Mincha? That's a good question. That's an excellent question. But I'm going to punt because that's really the answer to the question. I think is really a Tashlumin question. That's how do you understand Tashlumin? Does it count as if I'm davening a Mincha? Does it count as if I'm davening two Maravs? That's a complicated question. Maybe we'll do a Tashlumin shir. Okay, but it's a really good question. Okay, so let's move on a little bit. A third issue. If we count women, the fourth. Otherwise, we have. I mean, that didn't come out right. Don't take me out. Do not take me out of context, okay? It always comes back to the nush. Okay, anyway. Okay. Smichas geula letfila. There's a halacha. Oh, I love it. See, this is a talmud. Oh. A few years ago, there was a boy from our community from Baltimore who was learning. We had just made aliyah, and he was shana bet at Keren Biavna, an excellent yeshiva. I'm convinced it's the second best yeshiva. Anyway, so hello.
Who are you?
So, I mean, in Israel for Shana Aleph, guys. I don't
like that. Notice that you didn't actually.
No, he said yes. He said this yeshiva.
Anyway, so in all seriousness, he was. I'm telling you a funny story, and you're ruining it. Okay? It's by now, it's not even funny. I really should stop laughing. Anyway, I said, "Oh, I got excited because he was like really in his like super stark Shanabet KBY element, and anytime anything that was like good in the conversation, especially the Bar Torah or otherwise, he would go, oh, oh, and he had like this like pop to it. Anyway, my son, who at the time was like in fifth or sixth grade, just thought it was like the funniest slash kind of coolest thing. So for a while, thankfully, it kind of stopped. Like a week or two later, anytime anything would happen, oh! So when you said that, you reminded me of that. That's why you're the man. Anyway. Okay. So there's a halacha that says we have to connect the geula theme of the end of Kriya Shema and the Birkas Kriya Shema going right into Shmon Esrei. Smichas geula, letfilah. Is there such an obligation for Marv or not? And the ramifications thereof. So the Gemara of Brachos and Daf Dalid discusses this, and we generally paskin based on Rabbi Yochanan that there is an obligation. I got you, right? You totally thought I was going to say no obligation for Marv. Yeah. That'd be too cliche, right? I'm not that predictable. Neither is the Gemara sometimes. So the Gemara says that, in fact, there is an obligation for Marv. However, Tosfos there, Rabbeinu Yonah, they all ask the question, if there's an obligation, why do we seem to constantly violate it every day? How do we violate it?
Hashkiveinu.
And if you live in the States, Baruch Hashem. Right? No, Baruch Hashem, the Olam Ein V'Amein, which we don't say in Israel, but the minhag is to say in the Chutz La'aretz. That poses this question. How is that allowed? Isn't that a violation? So when it comes to Hashkiveinu, the famous answer is that's a Geula Arichta. If you take a look, that's really the same leitmotif. It's really expanding and extending the theme of Geula, so that's not really a problem. What about Baruch Hashem Olam Ein V'Amein? So Tosfos, the Rabbeinu Yonah gives an amazing chiddush. Rabbeinu Yonah says that was initially established b'makom Marav. Baruch Hashem Olam Ein V'Amein has the themes of Shmon Esrei in shorthand, and therefore it's not a hefsek because really it was always intended to be. Now we say Marav and it. But since it was really the themes of Shmon Esrei, the first opinion when it comes to Hashkiveinu was we're extending the Geula, so there's no interruption. And if we're in the approach to Baruch Hashem Olam Ein V'Amein, we're really just pushing back the Shmon Esrei. But you still meet in the middle, so there's no interruption. That's the explanation that the Rishonim give. However, the Ramban disagrees. And he says, yes, because you need it, therefore don't say Baruch Hashem Olam Ein V'Amein. And in fact, the Vilna Gaon's minhag was not to say it, and that's clearly, I assume why the Midrash of Eretz Yisrael is not to say, because the Vilna Gaon had a great influence on Eretz Yisrael. Every now and then you'll be in a community in America and the Chazan won't say it. I remember once when I was in YU, one of my friends was Chazan, and I guess he picked this Minhag up, and even though he was Chazan and everyone in YU was saying it, he just stopped and was quiet, and then he just started saying, you know, Yiskadal to go into Shmon Esrei. And I remember, I think it was the Mashiach or someone afterwards, told him, if you want to do that, that's fine, but don't be Chazan. Like, we say that here. Huh? They do not say it.
They don't say it.
You know why? They hold it to grow, I guess.
My family never did, but I don't know why.
Okay.
That's
a general answer to every question about Rambam.
What about the Kaddish? Like, isn't...
Good! So says... Tosfos quotes of Amram Gaon. Austin, you are definitely making up for your football game. Okay. Says that Rabbeinu Avram Gaon... He says, you know why we recite Kaddish after Hashkiveinu? Because there's no need for Smichas Geula Tefila.
Oh,
we don't hold like that, but that's what it said. There's an opinion. There's an opinion that says that. I'm just mentioning it. So there's this machlokes. How do we paskin? How do we paskin, gentlemen?
You can't get a little both ways. Either
you know, it's a machlokes.
Rabbi
Yisrael. So slow down. So we do paskin that you generally need it. You shouldn't stomp talk. And yet, because of the Kaddish somehow gets left away. Kaddish is okay, but it's really a question. But where does this come to the head? Shachar Pasas, what if it's Rosh Chodesh night? Someone wants to remind everyone about Yalav Yavo. Can the Chazan or someone, the Gabbai, scream out, Yalav Yavo! Something like that. So there is a discussion. Don't tell me you're waiting in the other room for the last 50 minutes, Coleman.
Huh?
Don't tell me you've been sitting in the other room for the last 50 minutes.
I haven't heard that
one. Ah, okay. Is there another share here now?
Yes, there will
be. Who's?
I'll tell you in 3 minutes.
Okay, then I have 3 minutes. I better hurry. No more questions, Mordechai. 3 minutes. Okay. So, says the Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to call out Rosh Chodesh because L'tzorach HaTzilah. It's not a hefsek. You have to have a... You can't be masik with gulim. This is not a hefsek because it is L'tzorach HaTzilah. But the Magen Avraham says, what do you need to come on to that for? He quotes the Rashba, Arvus is Rishus. That's why you're allowed to do it. And Mordechai's question of, well, you can't have it both ways, I would agree with you. Shar HaTzion doesn't. The Shar HaTzion, which is written by the Mishnah Berurah in his footnotes, Shar HaTzion says, well, you can kind of have your cake and eat it too, because even though there is a requirement to speak to the tefillah, it's not chomir kuli hai. It's not as strict as the Shachar HaTzimincha, because Marav is really a Rishus. Comes along the Maharshal, quoted by many of the postmen in Shulchan Aruch, says, what are you talking about? We can have a, like Mordechai, we could be inconsistent, we could say it's, even if we're going to do it, but it's not as enough. Marv is a chova now. Marv is like Shachar and Mincha. How can you change it? So this is our old machlokas. How do you understand it? This is the old machlokas. Is it that we've changed the nature of the tefillah? It's a really a chova? That Ravid approach? We go like a Rambam, but no, it's still a Rishus, even though we treat it as if it's a chova. And if that's the case, we could have some differences. Practically speaking, many communities have the minhag where they just kind of bang on the table to avoid the issue. A la Mordechai, if we want to hope you need tzvich school of tefillah, we shouldn't be playing around. And others where there are people that call out. Some communities, the chazan or someone, when they get to Yalav Yavo, start davening out loud. I never was really bothered by that, but I just saw yesterday the chazan Ish was against that. He thought it wasn't tefillah etiquette. So basically, that's what I got to say about Marav. And in case you should be in any way confused, let your heart not be. You have to daven Marav. That's so fast sure. Okay. Well.